This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Thomas and Brent from SUSE.
Hey, hi, I'm Thomas from SUSE. I'm CTO at the company, and I'm also a board member of CNCF and the Cloud Foundry Foundation. So very excited about the Cloud Foundry Summit. A lot of news, a lot of energy from the community, and we're here to talk about that.
I'm Brent. I'm the Global Product Marketing Manager for SUSE Cloud Application Platform, which is our Cloud Foundry distribution.
Cloud Foundry Summit, two big announcements, two new projects, IRINI and CF containerization, and Drew at the center of both of them.
We contribute to IRINI. It was started by IBM, but SAP and SUSE work together on that project. The containerization part of CF is coming from us, and that's something we've been doing for a couple of years. And it's now part of CF itself. It was already open source. We were already using it as part of our certified Cloud Foundry distribution, and it's now open source. One of the technical challenges that we had with that was that running Cloud Foundry as containers is great for a lot of different reasons. But one of the challenges was that it was using Diego, which is the Cloud Foundry container scheduler inside Kubernetes. So containers in containers, like split brain kind of challenges. And with IRINI, we will be able to select Diego or Kubernetes as the CF scheduler to remove that challenge.
How do your customers find moving to containers? Because many of them will have gone through the process of understanding VMs. They'll see VM from a developer perspective as an easy deployment. They're beginning to deploy more into containers, but it's not the natural deployment that we see from a lot of developers. Are they beginning to push you for better deployment options?
You're right, from SUSE, we're coming more from the infrastructure side of the IT shops and less from the pure developers. There are two ways to go containers. You can start from the application with something like Cloud Foundry, and then the infrastructure container part will come together. Or you can start from the bottom of the stack, VM to containers. And what we're trying to do actually is to bridge those two worlds together so that you can have the same platform. You want to containerize workloads only, or whether you want to use something like Cloud Foundry for cloud native developments on the same platform. We have more and more enterprise users moving from VM to containers. Sometimes they still use VM, so they have containers inside VM for security, for networking, to manage the storage backend. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong about that. But there are different ways to move to containers, lift and shift. So you containerize your entire VM, just removing the guest OS, and then it doesn't really make sense because you're not splitting your app into different services. But that's the start, and then you can start to benefit from the container lifecycle management. So yeah, we see that more and more.
One of the big benefits of Cloud Foundry is that a customer who wants to start containerizing their applications doesn't really need to learn how to do that, because all you do is CF push your code and Cloud Foundry takes care of that, puts your code into a container, deploys it to Cloud Foundry.
This move between breaking it into those services and breaking apps down, companies have come along and they've been cloud native from the start, have adopted it quite quickly. They understand this breakdown. But for many companies, whether they be an enterprise or even a small to mid-sized developer shop, it's a mentality change. You've got to rethink your application in a whole new set of ways. How much of a struggle do you think companies are going through in terms of that reimagining of how they develop?
And it's actually more a cultural challenge than a technology challenge in a way. There are different ways to do that. So with the legacy apps, it's very expensive to refactor as well. You don't see the benefit immediately. So what someone can do is actually develop new things. Let's say you have to develop new features for your existing app. The new things that you develop, try to split them in services. So you still have your big legacy app, but at least the new part will be more and more cloud native. And then progressively over time, then most of it will shift there because you will keep doing new things the new way. So that's one way of doing it. We don't really see a lot of big bang approach, like enterprise customers taking all their apps and refactoring all of them at once. That doesn't really happen that way. But sometimes they have different teams for different part of the applications or for different applications. And then starting with some teams to move to more cloud native development is also a way, because you need people, you need skills to do that. And working with partners, so we are not a service company, we're not an SI. We have services internally to help partnering with global SIs or local SIs, can then support our customers in that journey.
I'm glad you mentioned that issue of refactoring, because when I look at the journey from some of the enterprises I talk to, they start off thinking they can just put their applications into a VM and throw that in the cloud and everything will be fine. And then they all got burned with that. And then they started to try and reconfigure for the cloud. And that hasn't really worked because they don't understand the architecture. Refactoring sort of a halfway house on that. Do you think companies need to think an awful lot more about architecture before they even start to think cloud?
And we're talking about compute, so VM and containers. They also need to think about where the data should be, based on latency, based on performances, based on regulation. So you might need to have your data in different clouds, on-prem or whatever. And then it's quite likely that your compute will be close to your data as well. It's not easy to rethink all of that for something that you have for like 20 years already, but it's part of the exercise. The good thing with containers, though, is that it's not because today you decide to run your container somewhere that tomorrow you cannot move them somewhere else. So it's a lot easier to move than VMs. Something like Kubernetes is helping a lot because all public cloud vendors, they have it. There are like probably 50 or 60 different Kubernetes certified distributions today. As long as you're running standard things, standard in the sense of open source standard, then you can move them around as well quite easily later, probably more easily than VMs.
If we think about new entrants coming into the market, small houses, they've got a service, they think they can sell that. Are they coming through you as a distribution? Are they trying to go direct to people? Are they trying to go to maybe the large operators and get their service out into the market?
Cloud Foundry itself has what they call a Cloud Foundry Marketplace, which is a little bit of a misnomer. It's more of a catalog of available services.
What was the number? 500 when it started a year ago and 5,600 today, I think it is. Pretty impressive.
What Cloud Foundry includes is the ability to have what's called an open service broker. That is a component that allows your application to talk to one of those services that are deployed from the catalog. So different Cloud Foundry distributions would make different services available, either by default or just available in the catalog. And then an individual company that's running a Cloud Foundry distro themselves, an operator could either make that catalog available to developers to choose from, or they could severely limit it or pre-deploy certain services. Probably the best example or the most success would be the ones enabled by Azure and Amazon, because pretty much any service exposed on Azure or AWS is available to a Cloud Foundry application.
Google Cloud as well.
Google Cloud, sure, yeah.
How's that playing out in portability? We've seen the struggles that OpenStack has had with portability. You can deploy to 19 different OpenStacks tomorrow morning, but actually lifting and moving your workload from one OpenStack to another becomes a problem because each distro adds in a little bit of dependency, they add in new things, and developers, no matter what they think, will take advantage of those. That's why they've gone to that particular distro. Are you seeing a better option here with Cloud Foundry? Are they doing a better job of managing that ability to be portable across all the distros?
The certification program helps with that. In order to be certified, you need to meet certain standards, and one of those is that you don't deviate from the open source Cloud Foundry. So assuming that two different distros are based on the same Cloud Foundry version and the same set of features, then an application should be portable across them. You could run into difficulties where, as we just talked about services, if a service is available on one Cloud Foundry distro and not on another, then obviously you're going to have to rework your application to make that function. But in theory, it should work.
How much pressure does that put on you to look at all the services in the catalog and say, okay, we need to support all of them, or we need to refine this down to a certain set? Because it's a bit late when the customer comes to you and says, we'd have liked to go with you, but you just didn't have that one service.
We had the exact same discussion with Linux. Linux, it's dozens of thousands of packages. Enterprise Linux supported distributions, it's a few thousand. So you have to draw the line somewhere and then find software partners or service partners that will support their services on your platform, on your OS, on your Cloud Foundry, on your Kubernetes. Most of the time, if there's a viable company delivering the software service and also the business, commercial, and technical support, we would let them do that. It's also, we want to be a good partner in the open source communities, but we also want to be a good partner in the commercial relationships that we have. Most of the time, the service vendors are managing their own services on top of our platform.
If we think about services and marketplaces, whatever phrase we want to use around these, we've seen an interesting challenge that Jenkins has dealt with over the last year, and that was it found it had an awful lot of things in its marketplace, but many of them were unsupported, they were written by people, they'd become orphaned, some were just slow to update, and they have an impact on a customer. They delay your ability to move from one version of the core project to the next.
And security-wise, it's a challenge as well.
It is. When you look at the people who bring services to you, are you monitoring those services to make sure that as you version your Cloud Foundry distro, that they version with you? And how do you plan to deal with orphaned, or not even fully orphaned, but just where somebody doesn't have time to maintain?
When we have a commercial partnership with a service vendor, we will test the new version that they provide on the new version of our platform. So there's an ongoing certification process. There's an agreement in place for the support as well between the companies. So that's pretty straightforward. But then you have a lot of services that are just pure open source services with no companies backing them up. In those cases, if they are used a lot or if they are used by our customers, we are taking that on board for support ourselves. And there's a third way as well. We do that for Linux too. We have a marketplace for Linux packages called Package Hub that we don't support those packages. If something breaks, you're on your own. But if they're on that marketplace, we certify that it's going to run on our Linux or on our platform. Not supported by any company, not supported by us, but running. And if they're not running, they're removed from the marketplace.
One of the promises we had with web services, if we think back to the 2000s, was that companies would come in, that professional bodies would come in, and they'd write services, they'd write components, and they would support these and people would pick them up. One of the promises we've had with APIs is that enterprises will actually be able to now package up bits of code and offer them more widely. Have you actually seen enterprises now looking at the service market and saying, OK, we've gone through our code, we've done all of this with our digital transformation, and actually there's a whole block of things here that we are going to give back to the community or we think would help, and we might be able to make some money out of them. Is that conversation taking place or is it still theoretical?
All the things we are doing as SUSE is open source, and when we partner with customers or with business partners and we develop things together, sometimes they don't want to open source things. They want to keep it for themselves. But we try to influence that decision as well, to show them the value of open source, the value of contributing back. It's good for the community. It's also good for the contributor, because then they are also working more seamlessly with the open source technology as well. We do that a lot. I could name dozens of companies with whom we do that. So, but Fujitsu or SAP, IBM, they are peers in the community, they are partners, they are business customers sometimes as well, but we see more and more that from big companies, but also the small ones are also contributing back a lot. It was probably less the case 10, 15 years ago, but today it's pretty common, actually.
What about reviewers? We hear a lot about how many contributors are now inside the process, but contributions have to be reviewed, they have to be validated, and that's often a pretty thankless job because you get lost in all the, we did this, but actually, I made sure it worked bit. Are you seeing people being much more willing now to take on both sides of that, both contribute, but also be willing to review and assist other people's code?
It depends on the project. There are different culture, I would say. Companies are getting used to open source. And again, maybe 15 years ago, it was not really common for a lot of companies to contribute and commit and maintain. So maintainers are also coming now from a lot of those companies. They have maintainers as well, can review things. The other thing is also not about code, but about documentation and also about getting the community engaged and helping new people to join, onboarding new people. Best practices for building communities are improving. And of course, it depends on a project basis, but it's getting a lot more attention than in the past from a lot more companies.
We hear a lot about the speed at which companies are going to cloud. For small businesses, that's been mainly just throw it over the wall and forget it and hope somebody else will take responsibility for it. For large enterprises, it's a whole different game. And whilst they may have some cloud in there, whether they're fully committed or not, that's generally a different matter. How much acceleration are you actually seeing, not just from app developers and app providers and service developers, but also from those end user consumers, large or small?
I have an example in mind. We're a long-term partner of SAP, and SAP used to be very private data center based, and now we're seeing a lot of growth in public cloud to run SAP workloads. And SAP HANA on Azure, for instance, even for us, we're probably selling more Linux in public cloud today. The growth from public cloud is a lot bigger than some of the other channels. Having said that, most of our customers are not running just on one public cloud. Most of them are hybrids because of regulations, because of things they want to keep for themselves, because of performance, because of costs as well. So what we see more and more, actually, we have partners that are on top of OpenStack. They have a management tool where you can see where all your VMs are running, including in public clouds. You can see how much it's costing you, and you can move them around by a couple of clicks to move them to a cheaper place. Public cloud is not always cheaper. Even between the different public clouds, they have different models as well. We need to provide that capability to our users to be agnostic and go where it makes sense for them today, and tomorrow it might be in a different place as well, so provide that flexibility.
You recently had the advantage of being bought by a large company, with lots of money. How much is that changing your model? Are you looking at acquisitions? Are you looking at growing the company? Because you've had a pretty rough couple of years with being passed from owner to owner.
We've been growing for the past few years significantly, so growing business, growing revenues, but also growing investment, including some small acquisitions. So organically, we probably add 30% of new people every year to the company. We had a couple of acquisitions in the past, but becoming independent under a growth private equity partner, owner, it's also giving us the opportunity to grow faster and to do more acquisition as well. The technologies, the new things keep on popping up very quickly, and it's quite hard to find people. We hire hundreds of developers, but sometimes you don't find people that are familiar with some of the newest technologies. So acquisition is a way as well to get some of those talents to join us.
If we look forward over the next 6 months to a year, what are we going to see from both your Cloud Foundry distribution, but also from SUSE as a company?
For us, it's very important to bridge the projects together and make sure that Cloud Foundry has a clear focus on developers. Kubernetes is probably slightly more infrastructure related. We don't redo things in one project that was already done in another project. So trying to bridge things more, it's probably where we'll keep pushing. We see that with serverless or function as a service today. There are very different projects from very different companies. And at some point, it will have also to consolidate in something that you can use everywhere, use functions from different clouds. And so that's probably one thing that will come up in the coming summit, I would say.
Related to that in the announcements yesterday around Irini in particular, Irini still isn't quite ready for prime time, so to speak, but it will be certainly within a year, hopefully much sooner than that. So you'll see our cloud application platform adopting Irini and dropping Diego. You'll also see some improvements in our open source Stratos UI. Currently, that's basically just a visual look at what's going on in your Cloud Foundry cluster and the applications running. But that's expanding to also be able to look into the Kubernetes side of things. Single pane of glass that everybody used to talk about.
I love that phrase, single pane of glass. I just want to throw a brick through it sometimes. Thomas and Brent, thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.